This is
BBC.
BBC Radio.
Six Music. This afternoon from 4. Hey! Amy LeMay. Yeah. At 2, Guy Garvey's Finest Hour.
Six Music.
Right now, it's Matt Everett's The First Time with Nancy Sinatra.
Strawberries, cherries, and an angel's kiss in spring. My summer wine is really made from all these things.
I walk in town on silver spurs that jingle too. A song that I had only sang to just a few. She saw my silver spurs and said, let's pass some time, and I will give to you summer wine. Ooh, summer wine.
Strawberries, cherries, and angels in spring. My summer
Everett, and welcome to The First Time here on BBC Six Music. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and take a look at the pivotal first musical moments that have shaped their lives and their careers. And this week we have something of an icon, initially in the 60s and 70s, but someone whose records, persona and image has exerted a powerful pull on generations of musicians. Famous for signature tracks like These Boots Were Made for Walking, Bang Bang, My Baby Shot Me Down, and Something Stupid, in 1967, a duet with her dad Frank, she also had the honour of performing the title song for a James Bond film, You Only Live Twice. Her counterculture credentials were established in 1968 with the famous Nancy and Lee album, the one she created with the legendary Lee Hazlewood. That inspired fans including Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth, Richard Hawley, Primal Scream, U2, and our very own Jarvis Cocker, who crafted an album of songs for her to perform. My guest on The First Time this week is the one and only Nancy Sinatra.
I was 5 and he was 6. We rode on horses made of sticks. He wore black and I wore white. He would always win the fight. Bang, bang, he shot me down. Bang, bang, I hit the ground. Bang, bang, that awful sound. Bang, bang, my baby shot me down.
In this interview, recorded back in 2015 and never before aired, Nancy talks about her childhood, her first steps into the music business, and her friendship with Elvis Presley. We also hear what it was like to work with Lee Hazlewood and the first time she met her former LA next door neighbour, Morrissey. But I started by asking Nancy, as I do with all my guests, when was the very first time she was aware of music?
We played the radio all the time from when I was a little baby because my dad was always on the road with the band. So there was always music in the house, always. Although I don't remember, you know, 8 months old or a year or 2 years old, but I have photographs that my mother took of me standing by the radio listening to my dad. Then later on, we started, my brother and sister and I took classical piano lessons.
How old were you?
I was about 7 when I started, until I was about 18, a long time.
What was the first song that you can remember hearing as a whole song when you were a kid then?
That's hard, going all that way back. I think it might be 5 Minutes More, my dad's song, 5 Minutes More.
Dear, this evening seemed to go so awfully fast. We had so much fun, and now you're home at last. I look forward to a kiss or two at the garden gate, but you gave me just one peck and insisted it was late. Give me 5 minutes more, only 5 minutes more. Let me stay in your arms.
Were you always attracted to the world? You know, was it always a sort of a magical, attractive thing, this the sound that you were hearing out of the radio?
I was a fan of so many different people. It was an eclectic musical education. You know, you have to go back to the 50s and 60s for me, the Everly Brothers and Elvis and Johnny Mathis and Ruth Brown and Laverne Baker, and I had so many favorites, and I had a little album of 45s. Remember 45s?
Yeah.
And I used to play them all the time. I had a little portable machine, that, like a suitcase. You open up the lid and you put on the little center to make it a bigger ring for the 45. And I wish I still had that. I don't know what happened to them. I should ask my mother. Maybe she's got them in a box somewhere.
What was your favorite of those 45s? Which one did you love
the most? Oh, I used to love the double entendre stuff, the stuff we used to dance to. And the dance when we were kids was called the Dirty Boogie, the DB for sure.
Down in Atlanta on Decatur Street, they got a new dance and it can't be beat. Oh, they call it the Dirty Boogie.
She does the dirty boogie.
Everybody's good at dirty boogie now.
you know, like the original Shaboom.
Life could be a dream. Shaboom. If only all my precious plans would come true. Shaboom. If you would let me spend my whole life loving you, life would be a dream, sweetheart.
Shaboom. Money, honey, your cash ain't nothing but trash. I was an R&B fan, too, so I know, it's crazy.
She turned around and with a frown, she said, I ain't no circus and I don't need a clown. Your cash ain't nothing but trash, ooh-wee. Cash ain't nothing but trash.
We often ask our guests kind of the first concert they went to, the first music gig, but I guess you were going to concerts from as long as you can remember.
Pretty much.
What are the ones that...
Backstage, usually, in the wings.
So what do you remember from those, the earliest concerts you can remember?
The earliest? That's hard. I don't have a clue what that was.
I guess it was just part of your day-to-day world at that age.
Hey, baby, I ain't asking what you...
You mentioned Elvis, who you worked with. Can you remember the first time that you met him? What was he
I met him when I was maybe 18 or 19 years old. He was just getting out of the Army. And because my dad had scheduled a Welcome Home Elvis special for television, and he had asked me to be on it, imagine that, I was terrified. But anyway, he sent me to meet Elvis when he was getting out of the Army. And that was in a place called Fort Dix in New Jersey. And it was the blizzard of the century. We got caught on the New Jersey Turnpike. And the driver had to keep lighting. This was so scary to me. He took a rag and he would light it a fire in the carburetor to get it to work again every 20 minutes or so. It was awful. It was just awful. And all to go and meet Elvis.
So when you met him, you must have been pretty shaken up already.
I was a nervous wreck because, you know, he was one of my idols. And we were friends ever since. And then I lost track of him when I had my second child. And then he passed away shortly after that, I think in the following year. And it's funny how we carry guilt with us about things like that. You know, those are the regrets you have, right? The things you didn't do. Not the things you did, but the things you didn't do. And that's one of mine, not staying in touch with him, because I loved him dearly. We made a movie together. We were friends. I gave his wife her baby shower at my house.
No way.
Priscilla's baby shower was at my house. And still, I remember the night Lisa Marie was born and Elvis called me on the phone. I mean, that's how close we were, and the fact that I didn't stay in touch with him haunts me to this day and hurts my heart.
But a good guy, despite the whole world around it.
An amazing person, so loving, so generous of spirit and material things. I mean, just a wonderful guy.
What's the song we should play at this juncture, an Elvis song?
Elvis's Tomorrow's a Long Time, which was written by Bob Dylan. It's a brilliant song. It's my favorite Elvis recording.
If today was not in this highway, if tonight was not in this trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to me at all. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart softly pounding, only she was lying by me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. Thank you. I can't see my reflection in the water. I can't speak the sound that show more pain. I can't hear the echo of my footsteps. I can't remember the sound of my own name. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart softly pounding, if only she was lying by me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. There's beauty in the silver singing river. The sunrise in the sky, but none of these and nothing else could match the beauty that I remember in my true love's eyes. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart softly pounding, if only she was lying by me, then I'd lie in my bed once again. If today was not an endless highway, if tonight was not an endless trail, if tomorrow wasn't such a long time, then lonesome would mean nothing to me at all. Yes, and only if my own true love was waiting, if I could hear her heart softly pounding, if only she was lying. Once again.
So shall we get on with it, people?
This is Amy LeMay.
Wrap your ears around this. So much good music for you.
Tunes don't get much better than that.
There is something for everyone.
It's kind of weird.
And absolutely wonderful. Tease out those after hours by hanging with me for the kind of Sunday afternoon you really need. We're trying to keep you in the groove and slide from Sunday afternoon into Sunday evening. Kick back, relax a little bit. Pause for a moment. Deep breath. Oh, how gorgeous is that?
This is Amy LeMay.
Listen this afternoon from 4
on BBC Radio 6 Music.
Six music.
So your very first single, Cufflinks and a Tie Clip,
wasn't a hit. I mean, you've got quite a lot of pressure coming from your background. And then how did it feel to be like...
a terrible song. Oh.
I listened to it earlier. It's kind of cute.
Good gosh, Marty.
So do you remember it coming out and thinking, my career's about to start, and then... Oh.
No, I was never. I never had that kind of an ego, but I did want to make money for my dad's label. Fortunately, Tutti Camerata, who did all of the arrangements and the production for Annette, is the person who did my early records. For some reason, Reprise put me there with him, and I wasn't Annette. It just didn't work. But we did a song called. Like I Do, which is the old dance of the hours. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. Hello, mother. Hello, father.
Hello, mother. Hello, father.
Yeah. So, Like I Do became a big hit in Italy, Japan, I think maybe Australia. Not sure. I lost track of the countries. But it climbed the charts in other countries. So, it paid for my recording sessions up to that point. But you never. Another one came out called Thanks to You, which was another classical da 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 da.
Thanks to you for all the tears I cry now. Thanks to you, I know how hearts can lie now. I was thrilled each time you.
Came out and was another hit. So those little silly bubblegum records kept me on the label and kept sort of creeping up and climbing a little. And then when they were about to say, you know what, your contract's up and your history, the powers that be there, Jimmy Bowen took over the A&R department. And Jimmy Bowen recorded a couple of sides with for me, produced them. True Love was one, the Bing Crosby, Grace Kelly. And he was getting me on the right track. Pulled me out of bubblegum, put me into a kind of a bluesy rock feel. Mm. And then Jimmy said, you know what, I know who I'm going to put you with, and he put me with Lee Hazlewood. And that was the magic. Lee had written some songs that he had recorded already, that didn't go anywhere. Susie Jane Hokum was his singing partner in those days. And they recorded songs like Summer Wine and Sand and a couple of other things. And they were not successful. But the songs were so fantastic. So Jimmy put us together. We met. Lee played a few songs for me. So Long Babe was the first record we actually made. And that made the charts in the U.S.,
where you belong. You gave them all you had, and what did they give you? Well, they gave you nothing, babe, so give them nothing too. Ah, so long, babe. So long, babe.
So Long, Babe, I think was a big number 88 on the top 100. So we're still trying, you know. The next one out was Boots.
When you first met Lee, was it immediate you were like, there's something about this
immediate,
guy?
Immediate, absolutely. It was like
that.
Love at first sight,
yeah.
You know, except not that kind of love. But he was sitting there, it was at my mother's house because I was in between husbands and I was living there at my mom's. And you're laughing. he's there playing his picking and grinning guitar. And Billy Strange was with us. I met Billy the same time. And Lee had Billy play the quarter tone bass line on Billy's guitar. And every guitar has frets, as you know. Can't play it on a fretted instrument. You can only play that quarter tone on a stand-up bass viol with no frets. But they showed me and I got the idea. Ding, 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 ding. And I said, oh, wow, that's so great. And Lee sang it to me. And I said, oh, that's not a man's song. You can't do that. That's terrible coming from a man. It's chauvinistic. It's almost masochistic. You can't do that. So he said, well, it's not a woman's song. I said, well, it is. And that's the one I like, and that's the one I want to do.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing. And you keep losing when you ought to not bet. You keep saying when you ought to be a-changing. Now what's right is right, but you ain't been right yet. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you. You keep playing where you shouldn't be playing. And you keep thinking that you'll never get burned. Ha! I just found me a brand new box of matches, yeah. And what he knows you ain't had time to learn. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. Are gonna walk all over you. Are you ready, Boots? Start walking.
This is The First Time with me, Matt Everett, and that, of course, was Nancy Sinatra with her musical partner Lee Hazelwood and the classic These Boots Are Made for Walking. And we'll have more from Nancy talking about what it was like to record with her dad, Frank, and working in the studio with a legendary Wrecking Crew and a rather impromptu first meeting with Morrissey, all after the Six Music News.
Six Music.
This is BBC Radio.
Six Music.
BBC News at 1:30, I'm James Kelly. Two of the government's most senior advisers on coronavirus have issued stark warnings about the dangers of rising infection rates and the need for urgent action. England's Deputy Chief Medical Officer, Professor Jonathan Van Tam, said the country was at a tipping point and the number of deaths would rise. He urged people to minimise their social contact to protect the NHS. Professor Peter Horby, who chairs an advisory group on virus threats, said the UK was at a precarious point and tougher restrictions were required.
We're already seeing in some parts of the north that some hospitals are starting to see the pressure
we have a doubling time of about, you know, 8 to 15 days. So it's not long before those ICU beds could be full and we could be in a really difficult situation. So I'm afraid we're going to have to make some very difficult choices and act very quickly.
New rules for travel between different parts of England will form part of stricter measures to be announced by Boris Johnson tomorrow. The Community Secretary, Robert Jenrick, has insisted the government is working closely with local authorities. The White House physician says President Donald Trump is no longer infectious with coronavirus and therefore not a danger to others. He's expected to attend a campaign rally in Florida tomorrow. Tennis, and Rafael Nadal and Novak Djokovic are due to face off in the final of the French Open at Roland Garros in half an hour. The BBC's tennis correspondent is Russell Fuller.
This will be a 56th meeting. That is a record. Djokovic has won 29 to Nadal's 26. You'd normally say Nadal was going to win, as it's Roland Garros. But I do think it's different this year. The conditions do level things up a little bit.
And a former Australian Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd, has launched a petition calling for a government inquiry into the dominance of the country's media by Rupert Murdoch's News Corp. He described the company as a cancer on democracy because of its consistent campaigning for one side in politics. That's the Six Music News. The next update at 2:30.
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
Listen to 6 Music anywhere
on the BBC Sounds app.
6 Music.
And one for your dreams. You drift through the years, and life seems tame, till one dream appears, and love is its
Welcome back. I'm Matt Everett, and this is the first time on BBC Six Music, where we look at the key first moments in an artist's life and career. And my guest this week is 60s icon Nancy Sinatra, in an interview we recorded back in 2015, but has never been aired before. And you just heard Nancy's Bond theme for the 1967 film You Only Live Twice, composed and arranged by John Barry. That track was a departure for Nancy, as back home in California, she was used to working with arranger Billy Strange, who was also a member of the most famous session band of all time.
Boots and some other stuff was made with the Wrecking Crew, who's, of which
really strange.
Well, You Only Live Twice was recorded here in London with the big James Bond orchestra. But then we re-recorded it with the Wrecking Crew in L.A.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we had to because we needed to have a master that we could use for the top 40. And obviously, is it the London Philharmonic? I don't know. But that was not the sound that was selling. So we recorded it with the fuzz guitar that became known as like the secret agent's guitar. And it did make the charts. But yeah, we did that one with the Wrecking Crew. And I double voiced it to give it a more current sound.
Billy Strange, who you worked with for a very long time, was with the Wrecking Crew, and they are regarded rightfully as like the greatest session band that has ever existed. It must have been a joy recording with people.
Recording with them? Oh, forget about it. I still work with them when I can. Hal Blaine lives near me in Palm Desert. Yes, the greatest drummer. Don Randy and I still work together. He was here with me when I played the UK and Europe a few years back. Some of the horn players, Ollie Hammond, Roy Caton, guys like that, they were all fantastic. Carol Kay, Chuck Berghofer, these are brilliant, brilliant musicians. And not just rock. I mean, they could, with the exception of Glenn, they could come in and read a chart and play it instantly. They read music beautifully. Highly intelligent guys. They backed all of us, all of us. And the stories about them sometimes spending the night in the studio are true. They would, if they recorded until 12 or 2 in the morning and they had a session beginning at 8 or 9, they would just sleep on the floor in the studio instead of driving all the way back to the valley or wherever they were living, you know? They are fabulous.
What would be your favorite recording they did that wasn't one of yours then that we should play?
Oh, anything by the Beach Boys, I think. Like Help Me Rhonda or Surfer Girl or, you know, any of those.
Well, since you put me down, I've been up doing in my head. I come in late at night, and in the morning I just lay in bed. But Ronnie, you look so fine, look so and fine. I know it wouldn't take much time for you to help me, Ronda, help me get her out of my heart. Oh, help me, Ronda, help, help me, Ronda. 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 Help me, Ronda, yeah, get her out of my heart. She was gonna be my wife and I was gonna be her man. Come on, Ronda. But she let another guy come between us and I shattered my plan. Come on, Ronda. Oh, Ronda, you caught my eye and I can give you lots of reasons why. You gotta
Some Velvet Morning.
What does it mean?
Unlike anything else, really, any other kind of pop song that's ever been released, possibly one of the best things you and Lee ever recorded. Can you remember first hearing it and going, this is somewhere different we're going now?
Yeah, well, he remember, as I said, he had recorded his songs before, which I reminded him of many times, by the way. big shot, I would say. You never had a hit in your life till you met me. Don't give me this nonsense about being the big kahuna, the big chief. No, I used to tease him all the time. Yeah, Some Velvet. What a great song. My favorite is Sand of the duets. But Lee used to paint these beautiful fairy tales. I don't know where they came from in his head. I have no clue. But he always said Sugar Town was about LSD. And Some Velvet may have been some kind of other drug. I don't know. But it was voted here as the top duet of all time in Britain.
It's a great song.
Isn't that something? All time. I mean, that's going back to Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald.
Not bad.
That's pretty cheeky if you ask me.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell you about Phaedra and how she gave me life and how she made it in. Some velvet morning when I'm straight.
Flowers grow.
At 7:30.
Good morning.
Lauren Laverne.
Great to be starting the day with you. Normal service resumes.
At 10:30.
Well, I just cannot wait for you to hear this session today.
Marianne Hobbs.
Who's ready to throw a few shapes?
At one.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
This'll wake you up, Sean.
Sean Keaveney.
Absolutely excellent, that.
Really fills my heart with joy every time we play it.
And from four.
Steve Lamack.
I know that sounds funnily ludicrous, making such a bold claim, but honestly, that first ever gig changed my life.
This is
BBC Radio
6 Music.
Talking about duets, Something Stupid wasn't the first time you'd obviously sung with your father, but it was the kind of one of the first very big hits that you had kind of together. What is it like in the studio to work with? Because that's when someone's at work.
Yeah, the studio, the Something Stupid session was pretty hilarious. It was kind of like the ridiculous after the sublime, because they had just finished recording the album with Antonio Carlos Jobim. And it was quiet and sweet and lovely, beautiful. If you know the album, I don't have to explain it.
É pau, é pedra, é o fim do caminho. É o resto de toco, é um pouco sozinho. É um caco de vidro, é a vida, é o sol. É a noite, é a morte, é o laço, é o anzol. É peroba do campo.
É o nó da madeira.
And out goes that wonderful, gentle rhythm section. And in comes the wrecking crew. And... However, it wasn't rock and roll, so it didn't really make that great a change in the sound of the session itself, but it was different. It was totally different.
Was your dad quite strict in the studios? Were they quite... Because, you know, this is someone in the working environment, you know, this can often be very different to how they are kind of.
Yeah, well, we got the work ethic from Dad. I mean, we all learned it. I mean, you don't mess around. First of all, people are spending money. It's costing a lot of money to pay all of those musicians. And the label can't just keep pouring out money. You know, you have to bring the money back in. So the first thing you do is you listen once to the chart, because you've never heard it before. And sometimes you listen twice. Sometimes you tweak a couple of notes. If there's a clam in the trumpet section or something, you fix it. Sometimes you question the tempo. You sometimes slow it down or you speed it up a bit. And my dad was the master at that. He could spot a bad note in any section in the orchestra.
Fine-tuning it.
Fine-tuning, getting it ready to record, because you don't want to do a whole take and then have one bad note toward the end of it ruin it. You want to get through it and make it right the first time if you can. I think we only did two takes on that. But I don't know how many times we played it through and practiced. I have pictures of my dad and me standing, holding the music and going over it. So I'm assuming we're listening as we're looking at the vocal chart. They cleverly recorded us on separate tracks so that I could follow my dad's phrasing later, because I needed to match him, not the other way around. He was great at that because he was a band singer and he would always be part of the band. It was my job to be part of him being part of the band. So, yeah, it was tricky, but it was worth it. We just knew it was going to be a huge hit. We knew it. My dad and I knew it. I think everybody who played on it knew it. It was just something beautiful about that song.
I know I stand in line until you think you have the time to spend an evening with me. And if we go someplace to dance, I know that there's a chance you won't be leaving with me. Then afterwards we drop into a quiet little place and have a drink or two. And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you. I can see it in your eyes that you despise the same old lies you heard the night before. And though it's just a line to you, for me it's true and never seemed so right before. Every day to find some clever lines to say to make the meaning come through. But then I think I'll wait until the evening gets late and I'm alone with you. The time is right, your perfume fills my head, the stars get red and oh, the night's so blue. Then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
You must be fiercely protective of the legacy and making sure that when things happen, they are fitting to his work and the kind of legend of what he is.
We are notoriously protective.
Why do you say notorious?
Because we drive people crazy. We really do. We are perfectionists about his legacy. We want it to be put forward as he lived it and not as someone else thinks it should be. And we're the only ones who really get it.
And then I go and spoil it all by saying something stupid like I love you.
I do have to ask you about Morrissey, because you collaborated with Morrissey in 2004. Morrissey. Is it true you were... He was just like a complete obsessive about your entire work. How did you two first meet?
No, I don't know about that, but I met him here in London. I was at a hotel, I don't remember which one, and I got a call from downstairs at the desk, and the lady said, "We have a gentleman here for you."
This is unannounced?
Unannounced. I said, "Well, who is it?" And she said, "It's Morrissey." I said, "Morrissey? Great, send him up." So up he comes with arms full of LPs and 45s and old magazines and stuff. And I knew of him because of my kids being huge fans of the Smiths. And I said, "You don't understand this. I live with you and you don't even know it." Because we had a poster of the Smiths featuring Morrissey's likeness, big, you know, maybe 6 feet tall, on one of the walls in our house. And I knew who he was right away. I was so happy to meet him because I think he's such a great poet. I love people who are clever with words, like Lee or Bob Dylan, you know, going back to the Great American Songbook too. I admire people like this. And here comes Morrissey, and so shy and sweet and dear. And then later on, when he said, "I want you to do a song that I have for you." And he said, "I guarantee you it'll put you back on the charts." Well, I hadn't been on the charts in 100 years. So, you know, I didn't really believe him. But when I heard the song, I believed him. And he actually gave me his track that was already recorded. He gave it to me. And he got me a deal on his Attack label through Virgin. And my daughter produced an entire album, my daughter AJ, an entire album based around that song, Let Me Kiss You, including people that she said were influenced by me, and I had no idea about this.
Yeah, because there's like Jarvis Cocker and Richard Hawley and all these
people.
Yeah,
yeah, and Justin Moore, Sonic Youth, and Pete Yorn. I mean, I didn't know these young people were
really
into my music. I had no clue. AJ knew. So she said, "Mom, it's going to be great. We have to do the whole album."
There's a place in the sun for anyone who has the will to chase one. And I think I've found mine. Yes, I do believe I have found mine. So close your eyes and think of someone you physically admire, and let me kiss you, mom. Let me kiss you, you.
is someone that you physically despise. But my heart is open, my heart is open to you.
And the very final thing, what's the last song we should play? It's your choice of song.
Maybe something from my newest release, which is called Shifting Gears, which is only downloadable. Let's play Holly Holy, Neil Diamond's Holly Holy.
Why are you choosing that song?
Because it's a fantastic song. I have no idea what it means. It's typical of my music. I have no clue what Neil is talking about, but I sang it, and he said that my version of it is better than his, which Morrissey told me about Let Me Kiss You as well, that mine is better than his. So anything that's better than the originals, I think we have to play them.
It's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you.
You too. Thank you so much.
Sing the song of songs.
Sing, sing.
Sing it out. Sing it strong.
Sing, sing, sing.
Call the sun in the dead of the night, and the sun gonna rise in the sky. Touch a man who can't walk upright, and that lame man, he's gonna fly. And I fly.
And I fly.
And I fly.
Holly, holly, love.
That was Holly Holy, the final choice of my guest on the first time this week, Nancy Sinatra, who I spoke to back in 2015. If you enjoyed the show, head to the BBC Sounds app and search The First Time to listen to more shows from the archive, or even subscribe to The First Time podcast. A new series of Sound and Vision with Miranda Sawyer is back next Sunday on Six Music, but I've been Matt Everett. Thanks for listening.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
6 Music.
Tonight from 6, now playing with Tom Robinson.
6 Music.
At 4, Amy LeMay.
BBC Radio 6 Music.
Right now, it's Guy Garvey's finest hour.
In 1844, its aim and purpose was evangelism and Bible study. But now the public's confused by a Christian association with so few practicing Christians in its ranks. Many look on it as a network of hostels or a collection of subsidised youth clubs. And the YMCA's own conception of itself, says the report, is confused and uncertain. Few of its members today join with evangelism and Bible study in mind.
Well, I enjoy the football.
Just to play football?
Well, it's no going out right to you,
what do you think about the YMCA? Do you know much about its background?
Not much, no. I just come down here for the football, as I say, you know, really.